Our first reading today is from Matthew chapter 4, verse 16. The people who sat in darkness have seen a great light. And for those who sat in the region and shadow of death, light has dawned. Our second reading is from 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 6. It is the God who said, "Let light shine out of darkness," who has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Our third reading is from 1 John chapter 2, verse 8. Yet I am writing you a new commandment that is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mindy Moore, and I'm the campus pastor here at St. Luke's Midtown, and I'm just so glad to welcome you to worship today as we start this new series called Ancestry.UMC. Now, as we get into this, I want to tell you a little bit about my ancestry story. So growing up in my home with my grandparents, German culture was everywhere. Okay, we had like cuckoo clocks in all the rooms. We had the like dinnerware, the steins, all of that stuff. I remember my papa used to tell us all these stories about how he would travel to Germany through his job. He told us about the people he would meet and the experiences he had. He would wake us up in the morning and say, "Guten Morgen," which was just very cultural and lovely. He taught me how to count in German. Like, it's one of my earliest memories. And so all of that was happening in my home. And you can imagine how excited I was in college to study abroad. Now, the program I was looking at, it didn't have a specifically German location, but it had something that in my mind was even better, because I could go to Salzburg, Austria. Now, the reason that was better is because The Sound of Music is my favorite movie of all time. Try to talk me out of it, you can't. I think I have every single word, every single song memorized. So I was like, yes, I'm going to Salzburg, I'm singing all the songs, I'm having the moment. And I knew that on the weekends, we would get to travel, and I could go to Germany, and I could have this like amazing going back to my roots experience. So it was an awesome summer. I got to do all that. I did sing the songs. I did go on the Sound of Music sing-along tour. That happened. It was amazing. Highly recommend. And I got to spend a weekend in Munich. And so I got home, and you know, like when someone in your life goes on a trip and they make you sit in front of the TV with them and go through their pictures? I did it to my family. They probably didn't love it, but I did. And so we went through all of the pictures. Like, here's slide 35 of the same mountain that I saw out of my dorm room. But when we got to the slides, the pictures about Germany, I got kind of emotional, okay? I was like, this is when we went to Munich. It was so special. I was going back to my roots. It was like this homecoming moment for me. And my uncle was there. Now, my uncle is like this very academic, research-based guy. He's really into things like ancestry. So I say all of this, I'm having this very tender moment with my family, and he looks so confused. And I was like, "Uncle Mark, why are you looking so confused at me? Like, I'm excited about this. This is our German heritage. This is my homecoming experience." And he just starts cracking up. Like, he is laughing at me. And I'm like, I'm having a moment. I'm a young adult. Like, I'm coming into my identity. I don't know why you are laughing at me. And when he can get himself under control, he says, "You know we're not German, right?" I'm like, nope, did not know, did not know. Operated under some very false assumptions this summer when I was walking around Germany really feeling special about myself. And so he told me he had gone to Ancestry.com. He had done a lot of this work himself, and we were actually English and Irish. And it turns out my papa just really loved his time in Germany. And he just wanted to pass that down to us. So he did very successfully. Thank you, Papa. I appreciate it. I just want you to know it's good to know where we come from. And as we're going into this new series today, that's what we're going to look at these next 3 weeks. But you are hopefully not going to have a personal identity crisis like I did in that moment, because we're not looking at our individual heritage here. We're looking at our heritage as a church, and specifically as a United Methodist Church. Now, I'm going to say this up front. I understand many of you in this room do not come from a United Methodist background. I don't either. That's not what I grew up with. Some of you are like, I'm kind of amazed that I ended up in a denomination in the first place. Like, you didn't think that would be part of your story. But I think no matter where you come from, whether you've been part of the UMC or church in general, or maybe this is very new for you, it matters that we know where we come from. Because when we know where we come from, when we know where we've been, that shapes where we're going in the future. You might know that in just a couple of weeks, we as a denomination are going to have something called a general conference. Now, a general conference in the UMC is when delegates from all over the world, they come together, they worship, they fellowship, and they vote. They vote on important things that sort of set the track, set the shape of the life of our church. And this time around, we're going to be voting on some important things. We're going to be voting on what it means to remove harmful language from our book of discipline around ordination and marriage. And friends, it matters. We're going to be looking at what it means to fully include and affirm our LGBTQIA+ siblings. It matters. And so as we go into that, first of all, I hope that we will be in prayer for the work that these delegates are going to do. But I also hope that we remember where we come from. Because when you get to a general conference, it will not surprise you that there's just a lot of opinions floating around. If you get a lot of church people in a room, we have a lot of thoughts and feelings that we want to share. And some of them are so helpful. Some of them are not. But when we look at the opinions that are the most helpful in these moments, it's when we can look at who we've been and try to have the truest expression of that. I think when we do that, when we look back, it lets us ask some questions. It lets us ask questions like, how does who we were in the past shape who we are right now? How does who we've been in the past shape what it means for it to be 2024, trying to live out this thing called church? Obviously, Easter was last weekend, and I think one of the things that stunned me the most was how many posts I saw on my social media feeds from people saying, I'm not in church this Easter. I don't know if you all saw that, but it was like everywhere for me. I saw it again and again and again, and under those posts, I saw comments from people saying, me too, I've been hurt by the church. This is not part of my story anymore. And as I read through those posts, as I read through those comments, I think I felt a couple of different things. On one hand, I thought, this is so brave. It's so brave to be honest about where you are in your faith and what that looks like. And I just had so much space for what people were holding. And then on the other hand, I think I felt really sad, and it felt really heavy to me, because I thought there has been a lot of church woundedness for people. There have been so many good reasons that people have walked away from this institution called the church, and for those of us that are here in this room for some reason saying yes to this thing, we have such a responsibility to make space, to make it safe, to make sure that every single person has room for their story. And so I thought about that as I saw these posts. And I thought, if we're going to dream about creating that kind of church, it helps if we go back to see the kind of church that we've been. And so I'm going to take you about a couple hundred years into the past today, and we're going to look at some of the roots of our denomination. We're going to look at how we've been doing what Nancy read in that 2 Corinthians passage, light shining out of darkness. So in our U.S. context, it really begins with a man named Francis Asbury. Now, Pastor Rob's been telling me about this book he read called American Saint, and you can see, hey, Francis, he's here. So that's Francis Asbury. Now, near the end of the book, the author sums up his life like this. He says, as Francis Asbury got to the end of his life, there were these three things that he said, this is what I wanted my life to be about: preaching, collecting money for the poor, and visiting old friends. Now, these values, they weren't really unique to him. Those were the things that characterized the Methodist Church. I would say those are things that kind of characterize us. And so over the next 3 weeks, we're going to break those three things down and see, what does this mean for us in 2024? As we look at his life, as we look at his legacy, as we look at where our church has been. So today we're talking about preaching. And what I love about Asbury's story is that he was such an unlikely character to be talking about in this place at this time. So he grew up in this super poor part of England. He had to drop out of school so that he could work. He had some kind of conversion experience. He didn't have like a big education. He wasn't fancy. He didn't have status. He didn't have any of those things that you would think of that it would take to start a religious movement on another continent from the place that he grew up. But when John Wesley, who founded the Methodist Church, said, hey, I need some people to go to America and spread this word, Francis Asbury said, I'll go. And even though my guess is that people didn't have high expectations for this person, he did some incredible things. So in his ministry, he rode over 130,000 miles on horseback. Now, I want you to know, we were talking in our pre-service meeting. I was like, that would not have been the job for me. I'm very afraid of horses. They make me very nervous. Like, good job, Francis Asbury. But he did it. Like, he went all throughout this country on horseback to spread the word of Methodism. He visited every state almost once a year. He got to know people. He put down roots. He helped people grow this movement. When he got to America, there are a couple hundred people who would have said, I'm a Methodist. By the time he died, there were over 200,000. So that shows you the impact that this normal, everyday person could have as he brought the light and hope of Jesus. And one of the things that really drew people to this movement was that Methodism said, you've seen church done a certain way, but maybe we could do it differently. Maybe it doesn't have to be the way you've experienced. In fact, several years ago, I went to a Methodist history tour in England. Yeah, I thought it was awesome. It was so fun. You got to learn all about the history of the Methodist Church. And we went to this museum in a city called Bristol. And I've got to tell you, I was shocked at what I saw there. I was shocked to see how controversial the Methodist Church was when it started. So I'm going to show you one of the pictures that I took at this museum. I'm going to give you the highlights because there's maybe you can read that. I could not. So this is from a newspaper article from that time. It's a reproduction. And some of the highlights say, don't be deceived. These Methodists, this is about to get spicy. The Methodists use religion as a cloak to cover sexual license. Okay. Great numbers of persons of both sexes frequently assemble in meeting places at very unreasonable hours in the night. They engage in love feasts. Oh, mm-hmm. And holy kisses and strange trances. They make people go mad by their cunning arts. These heretics, these fanatics, these enthusiasts are out to destroy the church and bring down the king. Don't let them speak. Don't let them corrupt you. I read that. I was like, that sounds exciting. I want to be part of that. But here's what you got to understand about the Methodist Church. When it started, it was coming out of an institution. It was coming out of the Anglican Church, the Church of England. It was breaking rules and changing the way things were done. When John Wesley started preaching, he left the church building and he literally went to fields. He went to coal mines. He said, "It doesn't matter if you've never felt like you were welcome in a church building before. It doesn't matter if you're educated. It doesn't matter if you're the right kind of person. This message of hope and grace and God's light and love, it's for you." That's what that movement was about. Those are our roots. It's like that 1 John passage says, there's something new and true happening, and it's the light of Jesus Christ. You know, it's that hope, that message of light in the darkness that people needed to hear. I think we need to hear that. And when Asbury rode his horse from place to place, when he looked people in the eye, when he knew people in every state by name, he was taking that message to them too. That's why this movement grew into what it is today. Because he was breaking down geographical and social barriers, and he was saying, I know you think this is the way things have to be, but actually in the kingdom of God, none of those barriers matter. God's grace is so much bigger than any of that stuff. So I think if we're going to think about where we come from, if we're going to think about our DNA as a church, we have to come back to this. We have to remember that as long as we've been preaching as Methodists, as long as we've been spreading this word, the message we've been carrying is that Jesus does something amazing, and it's for every single one of us to experience. If we're going to go back to our roots as a church, we have to come back to these ideas of sharing light, of practicing radical inclusion, and giving generous grace. Once I was working on a resource for small groups, and it helped people explore what it meant to live out their faith, specifically in the UMC. And so as we launched this resource, I got some feedback. Don't you love feedback? It's so fun. So I got some feedback. That was not a big deal. But this person said, you know, I've got a problem with the content of this resource. Okay. So they said, there's one thing that you talk about over and over again. I mean, you just hammer it home every single week, and it feels like there's a lot of important stuff you're not talking about, and you keep coming back to this one thing. I don't understand why you talk about grace so much. Now, look, I thought the feedback on the resource was going to be like, you talk about social justice too much. Like, I've gotten that one before. Or like, you say every single word in the Bible is not literal. I mean, I've gotten that one before. So I was ready for that. But grace, I've never gotten that critique that I talk about grace too much. And so I came back to this person and I said, you know what? You're right. It's in every single part of this curriculum. But the reason is that is at the core of our theology. That's at the core of what makes us Methodists. We can't talk about being the UMC without talking about grace. Grace matters for how we see who God is, by what we believe God does, and what it means to be in community with each other. Grace is kind of the point. And so I think proclaiming grace, proclaiming this light, if we're going to talk about the things that we say and do as a church, that could feel like a big responsibility. I mean, if I tell you that I think we should be preaching the light of Christ, some of you are going to look back and be like, right, that's what we have you do on a Sunday morning, Pastor Mindy. That's your job description. But I guess the place that I would invite us into is that maybe it's all of our job descriptions. Maybe as people of faith, God wants us to carry on that legacy of preaching, of proclaiming who God is and how God works in this world. And here's my hunch. My hunch is that you're doing it and you don't even know it. because I have the amazing privilege of hearing so many of your stories. And so I'm seeing you do it all the time. I mean, I see it when Beck goes to Hubbard and Cravens. Not just that they get coffee, but the fact that they know every single barista's name. They know their stories. They tell me their stories. And when they do that, when they show up in this place and they get to know these people, what they're telling them is there's someone who works at a church who loves you and cares about you whether you ever come in this building or not. That is sharing the light and hope of Christ. I see it in how Nancy runs New Life Circle. I got to speak there last month, and I saw these women together supporting each other, loving each other, having a meal together, knowing that there was community that they belonged in. That is sharing the love and light of Christ. I see it in our outreach team as they stand at this diaper display every single week. I see it as they create projects for us to do in I Love My City and go to meetings about partnerships. Saying that we care about the community we're located in, that is preaching the love and light of Christ. I see it in the way that so many of you, and I think specifically about Doug and Katie, they showed up last week on Easter and they taught the large group lesson for our kids. That could have been 30 minutes they had to themselves, okay? They could have had that, but they said, we love our kids. We want to create this space where they have a foundation of faith, where they are known and loved and cared for. That is preaching the light and love of Christ. I mean, I can't say names for this because I would miss so many and you'd be mad at me, but I think about the amount of you that invite people to this place. You know people, you know stories, and you say, hey, there's a place that you might feel safe, you might feel cared for, you might feel loved. That is preaching and proclaiming the light and hope of Christ. You're doing it. It's our call, but I'm watching you do it already, and I'm so grateful for what I see. I'm going to close by telling you this. So one of my favorite verses in all of Scripture is out of the book of Isaiah, and Matthew quotes it, and we read it today. It says, the people who sat in darkness have seen a great light, and for those who sat in the region and shadow of death, light has dawned. I love this verse because I think it's pretty obvious that there is a lot of darkness in our world. I mean, it's around us. Some of us carry it in us. Like, it is here. In fact, tomorrow we're going to have this very tangible example of what it's like when things go dark, when they're kind of not supposed to in the middle of the day. And we're going to sit in that space for a few minutes. It's going to feel kind of uncomfortable. Our pets apparently are going to do weird things. That's what I've been reading. I mean, we're all going to feel this like, this is creepy. The darkness should not be here. But the good news is the sun comes, the light returns. And that's not just true during an eclipse. That's true on our spiritual lives. That's true in our world. That's true when the church says, we're going to proclaim this stuff for people to see. We're going to live out this legacy that we have. That's when we get to create and receive this light. You know,